Calling the meeting to order exactly at 9 o'clock, Tuesday, March 23rd. At this time, please turn off any of your electronic devices. And Molly and Beth, are we ready to go from your end? Okay. Let the record reflect that with us today on my right is Senator French, myself, Senator Menard, and then on my left, Senator Passavant. Our agenda, and also I want to introduce Sarah Munson as my committee aide. On our agenda today, we have SB 282, permanent fund dividend amount for 2010, and followed by Senate Bill 249, public records electronic transmissions. So we'll begin today with Senate Bill 282, permanent fund dividend amount for 2010. We have Senator Bill Wachowski here. Would you like to come forward and state your name and affiliation for our record?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Wachowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage. Thank you for hearing SB 282.
It seems like you might not be on. I'm not sure if you
can. Oh, is that on?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just turn it up a little bit. Okay.
And I also have my, thank you. I also have my staff member, Shelley Morgan, here. Madam Chair, this, as we're all aware, Alaskans have relied on their annual permanent fund dividend checks since its inception in 1977. Due to the economic downturn, many Alaskans are relying even more heavily on this year's annual payout than in past years. This bill will ensure that Alaskans receive a full dividend from the permanent fund this year. The permanent fund dividend is calculated according to a complicated formula that takes into account the average amount the fund's investments have earned over the past 5 years. Taking this five-year average allows for a smoothing out of the fluctuating ups and downs of the market.
Could you take a breath so I can just welcome Senator Meyer?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Let the record reflect Senator Meyer has joined us. Please continue.
Thank you. Current statutes, however, prevent the permanent fund division from paying out more than 50% of the fund's earnings reserve in any given year. Because of the downturn in the markets over the past couple of years, there is a possibility that this year the statutory limit of 50% could be invoked for the first time ever. This would mean that the full amount of the calculations could not legally be appropriated from the earnings reserve, even though sufficient funds exist. When we first filed this bill, there was enough money in the earnings reserve to pay out the full dividend. However, by law, they would not legally have been able to pay out the full dividend, and that situation still exists today. And again, when we first filed the bill, there were several hundred million dollars short of the amount necessary. That gap has closed, and there's a chance that it could close completely. The reason that we're filing this is because we don't know, and that gap still exists. This situation has occurred once before, where there was a chance that it might not be paid out, but we've never actually been in a situation where there has not been a full payout. The market's unpredictable, and without this bill, we cannot be certain that Alaskans will receive their full dividend for 2010. The bill is designed only to address the potential problem in 2010 by transferring from the earnings reserve account to the dividend account one half of 21% of the net income of the five-year dividend average calculated for fiscal years 2006 through 2010. We don't expect this to be an issue in 2011 because our inflation proofing is expected to be zero. And Madam Chair, Alaskans deserve to receive the full amount of the benefit from our state's all revenue during these tough economic times. This bill will ensure that Alaskans receive their full dividend for 2010 in the event that earnings fall below the threshold required for a full payout. This concludes my overview of SB 282, and I'm happy to answer any questions from members of the committee. We also have members from the Permanent Fund Division to answer technical questions, and also Tam Cook, who we worked with very closely, I believe, is online to discuss the solution that we've come up with. Thank you.
And I would like the record to reflect that we're joined now by Senator Kukesh. Welcome, Senator Kukesh. Are you concerned at all that this would be a precedent would be set for future or similar situations?
I think ultimately what probably needs to happen is we probably need to change the way we pay out the permanent fund dividend. I think we had a historic drop in the stock market a couple of years ago, and that's really what's causing this. We have enough money to pay out the full dividend. However, the way the law is written, we can't pay out the full dividend. And I think with oil as high as it is and costs and expenses as high as they are in the state of Alaska, I think if Alaskans don't get their full dividend, they will not be very happy with us, Madam Chair.
Okay. My colleagues, are there any questions for Senator Wilikowski? Senator French.
Thanks. And this may be more, and I appreciate the Senator bringing this bill forward. I think it's important, especially when we have the money on hand to pay for the dividend. We not let the, some rule that, you know, sort of impede us from doing that. And my question would be about that rule, and so it may be better directed to the permanent fund folks about what the history of that 50% rule is. That's my inquiry.
Okay. Is there any questions? Senator Passavant.
More of a technical one in the sense that right now, you know, the market has certainly recovered from 1 year ago, and you were indicating that the gap has been closing. What is the, you know, approximate guess as far as what might the loss be per PFD?
Again, Senator Passman, through the chair, when we first filed this, it was over $100 million, and it would have caused a shortfall of several hundred dollars to Alaskans' permanent fund checks. The gap is closed now to about $50 million. So I just checked, and I asked because I figured this question would be asked, and it would be about $80 shortfall on permanent fund check. Mm-hmm. Not a huge amount. It certainly closed the gap. We don't know if the gap will open up or close between now and June, however.
Mm-hmm. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess we won't actually know what the amount is until June 30th. So a lot of things can happen between now and June 30th, obviously. And I think you mentioned this came up one other time. I think it was 2003 or something. I'll ask the permanent fund folks. And we had that same dilemma, same concern. And, you know, the market improved and we got the dividend and everybody's happy. I guess someone had mentioned the precedent this could be setting, and I do get concerned every time we tinker with or manipulate with a system that's been working now for almost 30 years. You know, what's to say that next year somebody says, hey, I know we're going to get a dividend, but I want more, so can you just pay out 25% so that our checks can be bigger? That's the concern I have here, is that once we tinker with this, then there may be the request or desire to tinker with it every year.
Right. Senator Meyer, through the chair, it's a good point. And I guess it's ultimately a policy call for us, right, for you all and for us. And when I looked at this, from my perspective, I thought it, just trying to think how Alaska, you know, I know I have a fairly low-income district. People in my district rely very, very heavily on the permanent fund. And as a policy call, from my perspective, my thinking was, well, we have the money in the reserve. And because of this provision that you have to have basically twice as much as you pay out, we're not going to be able to pay that out. So the policy call from my end is, if you have the money in there, oil prices are high, we have a $10 billion savings account, we have a $2.2 billion surplus, I just think it would be really hard to go back to Alaskans and explain, because of this technical way this law was written, we can't pay you your full dividend. So from a policy call, I just thought that was a better policy. But I certainly understand the perspective, and I think it probably would be better to come up with a different way of calculating the way we do our dividends. I know that's been talked about for years.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, if I could follow up on that.
Yes, follow up, Senator Meyer.
You know, the dividend, I think, has become an entitlement. People just expect it every year. And I keep telling and warning people that the dividend is going to fluctuate. So just because what was 2 years ago was $3,200, because we added another $1,200 onto the
energy,
2000.
Yeah.
You know, I said, you know, don't count on that, because it's going to fluctuate and it's going to vary. And I think that, you know, it's just like if you own stock in a company, you know, some years they pay out a dividend, some years they don't. So at least that's kind of what I've been doing with my constituents. Mm-hmm. It's out of our hands. You know, we've got a system set up. You don't want us to intervene, because we'll screw it up. You know, if the dividend happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And hopefully no one budgets or plans on the dividend. I know some people have to, because they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of a slippery slope that we may be going down if we go this route. But I understand why you're doing it, and it makes sense, especially in a soft economy that we have. Our economy is better here than most states, and the other states don't have a permanent fund at all, so we're very blessed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator French, I'm going to ask you to restate your question. We'll go to Ledge Legal, Tamara Cook. Mrs. Cook, are you on, Ms. Cook?
I am, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Good to hear your voice. I haven't had much opportunity this year. Anyway, I'm going to offer Senator French to restate his question so you could give an answer from your department.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Ms. Cook. The question is about, I understand that we're basically paying out every year a five-year average of the earnings of the fund, or the earnings over five years divided by five. Maybe you can explain that. But the real question is about the 50% rule, the rule that we not pay out more than 50% of the money that's in the earnings reserve account.
Yes, and that is true. That's part of the formula, Senator French, through the chair.
Right, and I just don't know if you remember the policy debate of that time or what the rationale was behind that rule. That's the question, is what was the rationale behind the statute?
Senator French, I really don't. I think that dates from the early 80s.
Thank you. I'll ask someone from the permanent fund.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience from the permanent fund present? Would you come forward, please, and state your name for the record and help us out with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Laura Ashe. I'm the Director of Communications for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation.
Okay. And did
you understand the question?
I did. I understood the question. I don't know what the legislative intent was for putting that 50% limitation in there. Tam is always right, and again, right today. It has been a part of the statute for a very long time. I can't recall off the top of my head if it was part of the original 1982 final legislation creating the fund or the dividend program, or if it came at a later date. But that section of statute hasn't been altered since the 80s. There was only one other change to it a few years later that changed the wording of the five-year average, but I don't believe it affected that 50% limitation. So I'd have to confirm it, but my initial suspicion is that it's been there since 1982.
Madam Chair, just a...
Yes, a follow-up, Senator French.
Thank you. And just so we're all clear, that's exactly the rule that may prevent a full payout of a dividend this year, is that 50% limitation.
Through the Chair, Senator French, that is correct. It's a little, when you read the statute, it's a little bit convoluted, and you have to go back and forth between two sections and work your way through some math. But the ultimate end point is that you cannot pay out more than 50% of the balance of the earnings reserve to the dividend in any given year.
I'm just going to posit that part of the rationale was to make sure we had some money on hand for inflation proofing, because that's the same account out of which we pay inflation proofing. Is that right?
Through the Chair, Senator French, yes, you're correct. That is the account from which we pay inflation proofing, and statute does say that immediately after paying the dividend, the next step is to calculate and pay inflation proofing.
And just last question.
Okay, yes, Senator
and
French.
I think Senator Wilikowski made this point, but I think it's probably worth it to hear it from you. This is a year in which we have historically low inflation, very little demand for inflation proofing. What, if you had to calculate the amount now, what do you think we'll have to appropriate for inflation proofing this fiscal year?
Through the Chair, Senator French, inflation proofing is calculated off a calendar year number, so we actually already know that for this year, the rate we're going to use is zero. It's actually a negative rate, which isn't to say that we're in a deflationary environment, but it's, again, a convoluted statutory calculation that compares the average from one year to the average of the next year, and that produced a zero. So we're going to be multiplying zero by whatever the balance of principal is. So I can say with certainty that we will not be making an inflation-proofing transfer on June 30 of this year.
So
okay, folks.
So just... as it happens, what we have is sort of an historical anomaly this year where we've got plenty of money in the earnings reserve account, we can pay the dividend amount. The 50% rule is holding us up, and there's no other demand on that money for inflation proofing. So as far from the perspective of the permanent fund, at the end of the year, there's no loss in paying out a little extra because there's no need to pay inflation proofing. And we'll still have money left over in the earnings reserve account when we get all done.
Through the chair, Senator French, you are correct. Without any inflation proofing transfer this year, the money would either be sitting there or it would be paid out.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. But I certainly appreciate you coming forward and clearing some of that up. You know, we do alter and we have to tweak as legislators, and if there's something that we can look at to better, and certainly getting money out to the people that need it. And I think what was last year's, I don't have this written down, it's probably $1,302 or something was last year's permanent dividend. And you know, we're all very much aware because that is something that is utmost on all our constituents' mind. And if there's any way we can certainly secure or look at a part of statute that we can change to make sure that they can get a check most deserving, we want to, we wouldn't be diligent not doing that. So is there, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Laura. Good to see you again. Laura, what year was it that we were kind of in this same situation? 2003?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it was 2003. And I'm not as familiar with that situation. That was when I was still here in the Capitol building as a staffer. But as I recall, in the fall heading into the beginning of the legislative session, we were coming out of the end of the tech bubble bursting of that trough, and essentially the cupboard was bare. There was a concern of paying a dividend at all. The 50% calculation wasn't even an issue, and then there was a big rally. Markets recovered dramatically, and so by the time we were into the legislative session of 2003, that wasn't an issue anymore.
Okay. Now, is this situation, if I may, Madam Chair,
yes,
is this year similar to that year, or is your concern the same as it was in 2003? Or it almost seems like if you're taking a five-year average that we've been doing better these past 5 years than, you know, thinking back again on the technical or the tech bubble we had in 2000, 2001,
2003. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think I understand that for a lot of people the dividend calculation is shrouded in mystery and involves, you know, tail of frog and eye of newt. But there's two parts to it. There is the five-year average, which I think everybody is very aware of. That's how we calculate how much the dividend is. The thing that 2003, and again this year, is really highlighting is there's a second test, which is, okay, so we've calculated the dividend. Do we have the money to pay it? Regardless of what the calculation is, you have to have the money or you can't pay it. And that was the concern in 2003, that regardless of what the calculation was working out to, the earnings reserve was empty. And now in this year, it's the same issue. Regardless of what the calculation is working out to, there's not enough, according to statute, as of today, to pay what we project the dividend to be. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that there was the situation is different from 2003 because there's been an opinion from the Attorney General between then and now. And what that opinion did was it moved unrealized gains and losses out of the earnings reserve and over to principal. And that was part of the concern. That's why we could be so low in October, November of 2002 and so dramatically have turned around by the legislative session in 2003, was because at that point unrealized gains would have been part of the earnings reserve and would have caused that dramatic a swing. Now we only are booking realized gains and losses to the earnings reserve, which means that the balance of that fund, it is a lot more stable.
Okay. And you still have 6 or 7 months to go to calculate.
Madam Chair, at this time, where we are is at the end of February in our financial statement cycle, so that gives us about 4 more months.
Okay.
Can I just follow up on your
question? Yes, a follow-up, and then we'll go to Senator Pascvan.
So do you guys have any projections for between now and end of June as to... I mean, I know you're forecasting all the time, and you're always wrong, just like everybody.
Yes.
You know, that's why being an economist is a great job. You're never right. You're never wrong.
Yeah,
you're always wrong.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I never get the dividend amount right. when I try to guess what it's going to be. We do have some projections. We are looking at probably calculating a dividend of $791 million, roughly. That's based in part on a sort of stream of regular income that comes in every month. That stream of income doesn't include the gains that we see if we sell an asset. When we came in November, we were looking at that stream because that's all we could really look at, and that stream was not going to add up to be enough. But since then, we have had some movement within our portfolios. We have sold some assets, and we have realized some gains. And I want to be very clear that we haven't been doing this to get to a dividend payout. Our direction is to take the longer view, and that's what we do. But our board has seen fit to make some changes, and this has been the result. So what that means is between the point at which we started to come and talk to the legislature and now, we've made up probably about a little over $200 million to bridge that gap. And so at this point, as of February 28th, we're short by $50 million. Now, we just had a board meeting in late February. The board authorized some more changes to our portfolio, and our CFO thinks that without putting it down in writing, she believes that at this point we've already made it up, but we won't be certain until the end of the month. And unfortunately, the way that the effort that it takes to reconcile our books means we'll get that information for certain about the time you gavel out at the end of session. So.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Is Senator Passfan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to kind of sum up so I make sure that I understand. You're stating that there's enough money in the earnings reserve right now that the inflation proofing is expected to be zero, and we're not changing the law with respect to inflation proofing in this whatsoever. And it's the cap at 50% that's potentially a problem. Assuming it was a $50 million shortfall, what percentage of the payout of the earnings reserve would that be? In other words, I assume it's above 50% that cap. Is it 80%? Is it 60%? You know, that does that make sense? In other words, you say it's $50 million mm-hmm. underfunded, mm-hmm. and to make up, we would potentially say we want to make up that $50 million. Mm-hmm. What percentage above 50% does that $50 million additional payout constitute?
Through the chair, Senator Pascavan, I'm going to give it a try.
and I don't need an exact answer.
No,
I'm just trying
okay.
to figure out.
Well, I'll put out some numbers, and we'll see if that gets us closer to where I can answer your question. Right now, we're projecting a $790 million dividend. We're also projecting, and this is not including what I just told you about what our CFO thinks, but just based on her hard projections, we're projecting ending the year at $1.5 billion. But 791, if you multiply that by two, it actually comes out to a little closer to one. Well, now these numbers aren't going to work out that right, but to more than $1.5 billion. So that's where the gap comes in. So that if you're asking me what percent of the total earnings reserve the $50 million is, I can't do the math that quickly, but it's going to be in the neighborhood of about 3%, I think, or I probably am way off on that, but it's going to be a small percentage of the overall earnings reserve, but it's the percent that is coming into play is that we can't pay out more than 50% of the earnings reserve balance to the dividend.
Okay.
One last
follow
question.
Up, Senator Passfan.
You know, the permanent fund now is $35 billion, maybe $35.5 billion. So if, assuming we had a 1% inflation protection, what does that calculate out to tonight?
Through the chair.
Million.
No. Through the chair, Senator Pascavan, off the top of my head again, I can't do the math that quickly, and My iPhone just died, so I can't even use the calculator. I historically, over the last several years, when inflation's been in the 2 and 3% range, we've been paying $800 million to $1 billion to inflation proofing. So I think the key thing to keep in mind, and this is something that our CFO has been hammering into my head for the last 2 or 3 years, the thing to keep in mind as we're looking at inflation proofing in the future is to not worry so much about what that percentage is, but to look at what the total volume of the principal is, because that's what we're multiplying that percentage against, and that amount has grown so large. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're looking at a principal that's worth $34 billion. And so it's going forward, it's going to throw off bigger and bigger numbers on inflation proofing, even if we stay in a somewhat stagflation or disinflationary environment. It's not going to, we're still going to, if we have any sort of positive number on that calculation for percentage, it's going to throw off a big number for inflation proofing.
Okay, another follow-up, Senator Passavant.
Yes, just making the observation that the gap between the approximate $791 million and your forecasted $1.5 billion, that is $700 million, 2% of the $34 billion, assuming that were an inflator, that is still there. In other words, there's enough for a 2% inflator if we needed it, but this year it's zero.
Yes.
I'm just putting the numbers together.
Through the chair, Senator Pascavan, even if we pay a full dividend this year, there's still going to be a lot of money. So, over $700 million left in the earnings reserve.
So I guess we're getting down to the question, do you feel that this is a moot point? Should this legislation pass? Do you see the value from your perspective with this legislation?
Senator Menard, creating the dividend was the legislature's call. Putting the 50% rule in was the legislature's call. Regardless of what happens with the actual statutory net income over the next couple weeks, whether or not to put this mechanism in place as a safety valve is the legislature's call. We brought this matter to your attention not necessarily with the idea of asking for a legislative solution, but it's certainly within the purview of the legislature. I guess what I'm trying to say is that we are completely neutral on this and really have no opinion. It's we manage the money, and you tell us how to pay it out. So it is, as Senator Wilikowski stated before, it's strictly a policy call. There is no obvious answer to this.
But you can appreciate you're the expert in this area, and so we want to have you weigh in. But I know you're saying you're neutral. The department's neutral.
Absolutely. And, Madam Chair, we were, regardless of whether or not the legislature is going to seek to affect this issue, we understand that it's something that's going to be very important. And that's why, even though Mr. Burns, our executive director, felt very confident that we would make up this gap, we still felt it was crucial that we let you know, and let you know well in advance, even when the gap was still quite large, because this is something that's going to be of concern to legislators and their constituents, regardless of how you decide on this bill today, and we wanted you to have plenty of time to think about it.
Okay, thank you. We're certainly happy to begin the conversations. Is there any other questions from my, okay, Senator Meyer?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this is for the sponsor. On the bill itself, it says transfer from earnings reserve account to the dividend account, permanent fund dividends equals one half of 21% of the net income of Alaska permanent fund determined under blah, blah, blah. I have no idea. Is that get us where we want to be, or is that, when you say 21% of the net income, is that the right number?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I'm not Tam Cook, but I am very familiar with our little section of statute, and my belief is that would absolutely get you to where you want to go, because what it's saying is that you will pay out the calculated dividend regardless of what statutes say, and that is our dividend calculation. It's one half of 21% of the net income.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your knowledgeable testimony. We appreciate it. Okay, let's see, is there anyone else under that would like to come forward under public testimony? Anybody online? Or we'll have Sarah check one more time to see if anyone signed up there. Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony, and we'll go on. We'll move on to discussion. Do my fellow committee members have any questions or comments at this time? Okay, so what is the will of the committee on this bill? Do I hear a motion to move out Senate Bill 282 from committee with individual recommendations? Senator French?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to make that motion. I move that Senate Bill 282 be passed out of this committee.
Do I
on
hear it?
To the next committee referral with the individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Do I hear any objections to that? Okay, hearing none, Senate Bill 282 moves out of State Affairs to Finance. We will take a brief at ease to sign the bill. Thank you. ...249 public records, electronic transmissions at this time will be brought up. And I see the sponsor of the bill is here, Senator Johnny Ellis. Please come forward with Max and state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Johnny Ellis. I represent downtown and midtown Anchorage in the Alaska State Senate. And again, I appreciate this opportunity to present Senate Bill 249, the Public Records and Electronic Transmissions legislation. The bill simply strengthens and clarifies current law regarding access to and preservation of public records. And it's come to my attention, Madam Chair, that the state really doesn't have its act together in this regard. And so that's what this bill simply and straightforwardly attempts to do. Current statutes, I discovered, have three different definitions of what is a public record. So if you talk to a lot of folks in the state government, there's a significant amount of confusion and lack of direction in this regard. There's one definition for maintenance of records. There's a different definition for access to records, and a different definition in relating to criminal statutes. And so this is an attempt to make sense of that confusing situation that we have today in state statute. The bill creates a consistently broad definition of what is a public record. It explicitly includes electronic transmission within that definition, so that's brought into the definition. It clarifies the duty of state agencies to preserve records and the ability of the public to access records that are required to be preserved. And finally, it explains that impeding the preservation of or access to public records is a violation of existing criminal law. The bill also goes on to amend the Executive Branch Ethics Act to require state employees to use state email for state business, which is simply codifying in statute the goal of Department of Administration Commissioner Kreitzer's current policy. The Parnell administration has a policy going forward that I support, but I think it's important to enshrine in permanent law in state statute this policy because in several previous iterations there was not a clear policy in place. And finally, the bill limits the fees the state can charge for access to public records to the actual cost of duplication. This is what 14 other states do. We aren't just making up something new. We're taking the experience of other states in this regard so as not to include some inflated cost of labor to produce the records. There have been news reports of just fairly stunning amounts of money that would be required of citizens or of journalists to access public records. And if the fees are so high or so inflated, it is a barrier to access to public information. So Madam Chair, in broad strokes, that's what the legislation attempts to do. Mr. Hensley has been helping me with the details of the legislation and is familiar with some of the details that underlie the policy.
Okay, thank you.
Proposed policy.
Okay. Are there questions for Senator Ellis from my committee members or concerns? Comments?
Go ahead.
Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see that there are three, we still have three definitions of public record here in the bill. Sections 1, 3, and 7 each amend the definition of public record. Are there, and I haven't laid them side by side to compare them word for word, are there any differences, substantial differences amongst the three definitions.
Through the chair, Senator French, in your packet, you'll find a side-by-side of the three existing definitions. It should be the one of the last pages in there. What this bill does is it recombines those three existing definitions, and the language in statute is maintained in those three places, but the as the bill proposes it, it would be identical in each situation.
Short answer is yes, they're all the same.
Yes, they're all the same, and that explains how they were different there.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else that would have a question of the sponsor?
Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Ellis, for bringing this forward. This is always a tough area, and I don't think I have a question here, just how you would respond to your constituents as I have struggled with this. They have oftentimes said to me that these are public records, so they should be free to the public. And if you charge, then you're automatically prohibiting perhaps people who don't have the money to pay for the copying charges or to pay for whatever fees that we have to charge them. But on the other hand, I know people can ask for the moon, and it does cost the state to provide this material. Do you feel like this is kind of a happy medium then, to the point where we want everyone to have access to the public records, but on the other hand, too, we have to be understanding of the costs? And I guess it, when somebody asks for the last 5 years of emails or whatever, it costs the state to provide that, and so you and I are paying for this person to have that. It's just hard to find the balance, I guess, is my frustration here, and I'm hoping, and it looks like your bill does that.
Madam Chair, through the chair to Senator Meyer, you hit the nail on the head. These are public documents, public information. I take that very seriously. I think we all do. Our responsibility is to be responsive as a state government to our constituents. And the choice that am proposing to make in this legislation is to charge for the actual cost of the duplication and not for the, you know, staff time or the commissioner or some underling to, as part of their salary, assigned to the cost of providing these documents. So we followed the example of 14 other states. Every state grapples with this issue of trying to make access to public documents to the members of the public. And so I've chosen to propose here in this bill the actual cost of duplication and not the attendant salaries of state employees. There may be a better definition, but other states haven't quite found it either. So that gets to the heart of this subject.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it. And like I said, I think you've found the sweet spot, so to speak, on the balance here. But there are
not
some
perfect.
Yeah, I was going to say there are some that would say that you know, we shouldn't even charge for the duplicating costs because this is public records that should be open and free to the whole public. But
Madam Chair,
for my comment, it kind of falls in the line of frivolous lawsuits and frivolous requests for copies, and I think at some point in time we have to say enough is enough, what's reasonable. So that's kind of how I see this bill correcting that. I was going to ask you, do you think electronic transmission is overly broad, the title, that definition, or... Yeah.
Madam Chair, I think that's the term of art that's often used. If there's greater specificity that could be achieved there, I'm open to that. But I think that is the standard term of art in statute.
And have you, on these other 12 or 14 states that have this on the books, do they use electronically transmission?
I believe that's the case, but I'll ask Mr.
Yes.
Madam Chair, on the question of the definition of electronic records or electronic transmissions, what the bill states is that what we were trying to accomplish in draft in using that term as opposed to specifically email or whatever other form
PCs
is
or whatever, yeah.
The fact that technology changes and
okay.
In the future other forms of communication may become more popular. We didn't need, wanted to avoid the necessity to come back and redefine it. So what the statute reads is that, or what the bill provides is that an electronic record that provide that creates a record that can be compiled and tracked by the departments. And you'll see that, I think it was explained very well in the fiscal note in your packets, that this is something that gives them the flexibility to whatever technologies they choose to adopt, but doesn't require them to do things that aren't technically possible.
Okay.
And that's where you get into the risk of specifically mandating particular technologies. And in terms of the other states, the 14 other states that use duplication costs, nearly every state has, every single state has a public records law, and I would have to go back and look which ones specifically include electronic records. Many of them do not specify, but their courts or other, or that their governments have determined that existing law includes electronic records without specifically noting that. So,
another question I would have, would this affect all branches of state government? And then I guess the second part of that would be, and would it affect state personnel? Would this affect all branches?
The bill as it's written would affect different parts of state government slightly differently. The requirement to use official emails for official business is an amendment to the Executive Branch Ethics Act. The courts and the legislature have separate versions. And the ability to access public records would apply to all of state government.
Personnel.
And, oh, and the definition of personnel that's used is a public officer, which is a person with the ability to make, essentially make a decision. So the staff secretary wouldn't be getting in trouble for not properly maintaining or preserving records. It would be the person who has the responsibility to take a decision, make a decision on behalf of the state. And it's a that's a fairly broad definition. It includes boards and commission members. It includes managerial positions. And I can get the exact definition back to the committee. But it's fairly broad, but doesn't include the lowest level staff.
Okay. Senator Pasvan.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the my only experience in the cost structure was in the HIPAA federal law, where they went to great length to allow patients to have access to the records because there were prohibitive fees and charges that were being imposed upon the public just to get copies of their own records, and so they imposed very similar to this to make sure that people had access to their own medical records. So, you know, I support this because you can use calculations of costs in many different manners to make sure that it essentially you never get the record out, and so this puts a cap on it so that you do have access to public records. And so I think that this is a good bill in the sense of what it's trying to do to make sure that it's accessible to the public.
And Madam Chair, if I can, Senator. If I can make a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. During the course of my presentation, I mentioned Commissioner Kreitzer at the Department of Administration, and I had not intended to put anybody's name into this. I've gone to great pains in this legislation to be responsive to policy questions and policy issues, not to replow old ground or to drag personalities into any of this. And I just did want to make the point that the current administration has a policy in place that this bill seeks to make permanent. Okay. After discussion and deliberation, if we think that's a wise thing to do, I personally think that just a policy from administration to administration that change over time is not a good way for the public to know exactly what the policy is or for state employees to really be up to speed on the policy. And so I think it's incumbent on the legislature to deliberate and put these things in statute if we think a good policy is in place. And this bill is along those lines. I think that what the current administration is doing, without naming names, makes sense to me, and it makes sense to me that if the legislature so chooses to move forward and put that into statute. So I'm not bringing any history or necessarily or personalities into this debate. I've kept it on the policy decisions that are begging for resolution.
Is there any pushback at all on this legislation that you know of, that you've heard your office has fielded any questions?
None whatsoever. Okay. I mean, if I were proposing to change what the current administration was doing or to criticize them by saying they're off mark and this is a different way to go, it's not my style to try and score political points like that, and that's not the case here. We are enshrining their current policy. I think they've made a good decision enshrining that, so it's the permanent policy of the state of Alaska, and we know that going forward. So no pushback at all.
Okay, thank you. Senator Kukash, okay. Okay, Senator French.
Just one more question. Section 2 is, at least from my perspective, to a large degree, sort of the meat of the bill, because this is the a portion of the bill that makes it a command that you use the our public record system to conduct state official business. And as you know, Senator Ellis, we have broadened the definition of official action over the years in response to some shortcomings in our law. And I'm just wondering what remedies you see what happens if you don't do what the statute says to do? That's my question. If a public officer does not use state system to take official action, what's the remedy? What happens if you break the statute?
Well, Madam Chair, to Senator French, you would refer on to page 4 of the bill. Section 6 addresses your question. Mr. Hensley?
Section 6 is a reference to existing criminal law, which refers to the destruction, impairment, anybody who hides, destroys, changes, otherwise impairs public records. So by establishing that electronic documents are public records and that public officers have a duty to ensure that their electronic documents are included in the public record system, their noncompliance with that would fall into under existing criminal punishments.
So we're connecting the two.
And
Senator French,
just to follow up, maybe for the record, we could have you tell us what 11 on page 4, 1156, 815, and 1156, 820 refer to.
Alaska statute. Okay.
Madam Chair, I don't think we have that.
Okay, you're referring to page 4.
Briefly, it's line 19.
Line 19.
I can look it up there.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. I don't think we have to take it at ease. We'll just...
last question. While I'm looking this up, okay. I can get the answer. And would... might it also... Because I guess... might this also not be the basis of an Ethics Act violation allegation? I mean, is that what you perceive? Do you see most of these problems being solved by the criminal system or by the Ethics Act?
A mix of the two, actually.
We'll just be patient here a second. It should, you're used to looking statutes up quickly, so.
I'm sure it's always lucky to have a couple of attorneys.
Yeah, three.
At least three.
Well, you're in luck, all right. just for the record, 1156, 815 is tampering with public records in the first degree, Class C felony. 1156, 820 is tampering with public records in the second degree, a Class A misdemeanor.
So do you have a satisfactory answer then, Senator?
My question's been answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead now and open to public testimony. And Beth or Molly, do we have anybody that's...
I have one person
that's from the Deputy Commissioner Department of Administration, and Rachel Petro is here for any questions that we might want to pose to her. And I don't see that there's any, so, and I'm not seeing anyone. Okay, Glenn Cook, did you want to come forward? And okay, and thank you very much for sharing your legislation with us. And would you state your name for the record and your affiliation, please, Mr. Cook?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, my name is Glenn Cook. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums for the State of Alaska. Just a few brief things. When we talk about other states not charging for access to public records, most of those states that I'm aware of are raising the money to support the archives in the state through fees, for filing fees for every time a document is filed in the state.
Okay.
And we don't have that. So taking away fees to be able to provide access to records, if it's extensive records that are being requested, could be devastating to our programs because of the staff time to do it. We're running on such skeleton staffs at this point that adding the additional amount of work to those staff, you know, typically with that funding, we could go out and hire somebody to come in and assist or do something. But without that, you know, that's the one point I wanted to make on that. So I just wanted to have that on the record. We were talking about public officer may not send or cause another to send information on by electronic transmission within a system for electronic delivery unless the system is operated and maintained by the state. I guess my question would be on that. How does that relate to those of us that have cell phones that we own personally that are partially paid by the state for part of the monthly fees? They're not state system, but if we're up on the road doing something and we get a request and we respond on that, then are we in violation? So, you know, just some things to think about there. It's not clearly defined on that.
And maybe we could have Rachel Petro weigh in on that question for you.
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, this is Rachel Petro, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration.
Did you hear the question loud and clear, Rachel?
I believe Mr. Cook's question was in regard to personal use of cell phones for state business, and currently we do have a reimbursement schedule in place, and I am unfamiliar with the details of that plan, and would be happy to go back and get a full answer to that question.
Okay, and we have, would you state your name, please, again, for the record? We have
Thank you, Madam Chair. Max Hensley, staff to Senator Ellis. And I think the quickest answer to that is that it wouldn't be the cell phone that would create the record, it would be the email system. So if you have your state email linked to your cell phone, to your personal cell phone, it would still go through the state maintained and operated system. But the issue would arise if you were using a private email or other system. Hopefully that clears that up.
Okay.
To the chair.
Yes.
Yeah, that does to a large degree, other than if you get a text message. Text messages aren't documented through the email system. So, you know, I'm just trying to think of the wording on it as to how that could affect.
We appreciate, because we always try to get, if there's pushback or questions in opposition to the legislation, so.
To the chair, also, when we're talking about use of electronic transmission, the way it's worded is pretty broad, which I understand needs to be to a large degree. One question I have is, could this be construed when it says anything, you know, basically reviewed by a receipt of a communication that can be reproduced in paper form through the automated process? Well, the phone system that we have in the state office buildings now is a digital system that technically can be And I wonder if we want to, exclude or how that should be done in here. Otherwise, we could be required in the future to document all phone conversations and have to do searches against them for discovery or other issues. So it's just another issue that with the digital phones, they can be captured.
Okay, and Rachel, did you want to weigh in on the question from Mr. Cook? And then I'll go to Senator French.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, again, this is Rachel Petro. I would like to weigh in, and I would like to just state for the record, the electronic transmission definition that is here in statute, I'm hearing staff to Senator Ellis, Mr. Hensley. I think that that is a, we would like to discuss that definition and what it means, because increasingly everything is digital. And so I think it is important to have that discussion and be happy to work with the sponsor and other members of this administration to sort that out to make sure that we have a workable definition and we're all on the same page.
Okay, that sounds very reasonable. But Senator French, you wanted to?
Along the same lines, Madam Chair, thank you. And I'm just not, I'm wondering whether we are referring, when we talk about the phone system, whether we're talking about a record of the phone numbers called from and to, or whether you mean some capturing of the substance of the conversation itself. I couldn't tell from the remarks which was being referred to.
Through the Chair, Senator French, the latter on that, the capturing of the actual voice.
And just so I can understand, are you saying there's some system now in place that keeps the record of the conversation itself on a data bank or in a computer, a hard drive?
Through the Chair, Senator French, at this time, from my understanding, we are not capturing. It's captured for a very brief period of time and then not maintained. I'm just, in the future, it could become a discoverable item of this is a something that could be captured that is doing state business, you know, and we, you know, I'm just, are there legal implications to that?
Okay, Senator French?
That's news to me that the contents of your conversation is captured on a hard drive, even momentarily, and I guess I'd like just a little more information about how that system works and who's monitoring it.
That,
Madam Chairman,
yes.
This is Rachel, and I'd be happy to address that.
Would you go ahead, please?
Through the Chair, Senator French, this is Rachel Petro. And currently, the voice over internet protocol phones that are in place throughout most of state government, replacing the older system, they have the technical capability to record a data transmission. Currently, the data is not stored or recorded in any manner. When I referred earlier to the fact that we'd like to discuss the definition of electronic transmission, that is solely because the possibilities, anything is possible today in the technical realm. And when you read the broad definition, you have these types of questions that, such as that Mr. Cook brought up. So those are conversations are not being recorded. No data is being stored in that regard. In fact, I do not think that even telephone numbers beyond a certain, you know, time frame are being stored. But I could certainly check on that specifically for you and get back with you.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. We do have Senator Kukesh.
I appreciate your coming here today and talking. I didn't hear from you whether or not you oppose this legislation or were here in support of the legislation. I heard a couple of comments that you had with no recommendations, of course, on how to make this a better bill. I'd really appreciate your opinion on whether we should go forward with this bill or not. I think the intent of the legislation is pretty clear. I think there's a good goal here. But and I also like to know whether your position is, if you oppose it, is an official position of your department.
Through the Chair, Senator Kukesh, I think that there is merit to the bill. in that it codifies some things that are already being done in the state. I would like to see some changes in wording or, you know, a few things like that. I would not be real supportive of dropping the fees for doing searches if we can't pick up the cost some other way like other states do. I would love to see free open records to anybody that asked for them, but the money has to come from somewhere. It's just that these other states have found another way to cover those costs through the recording of fees. I think that there are some real merit to the main intent of the bill. I think it needs some work, but I think it, you know, I'm not opposed to it.
Okay. All right. And we have another question from Senator Pasquin.
Have you given any thought on the fee that you are thinking might be reasonable, you know, not excessive, and I don't know substantively what you do, and so I'm trying to get my thoughts around what you're suggesting might be a solution.
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin, I know that Washington State and I believe New Jersey are two of the ones that I'm most familiar with, and they charge like a $2 fee per license or anything else that is filed in the state. That this goes to the state archives to be able to support the programs of the state archives to provide free access to records. So it could be anything from fishing licenses to marriage licenses to everything. That's how they raise their money for their operating funds.
A follow-up, Senator Pasquin.
So if I understand what you're suggesting is that if somebody wanted to research whether somebody had a fishing license, it'd be a $2 flat fee, and then if they wanted a copy of it, then 15 cents or 20 cents or whatever the charge would be for that?
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin. No, what I'm suggesting is that at the time I purchase a fishing license, I pay a $2 fee. That $2 fee pays to support the programs of the state archives, who, you know, becomes ultimately responsible for a lot of the state records for maintaining and providing access to into the future. So on any permanent records for the state archives. So those funds go to support that. So anybody that takes out a marriage license, takes out a, you know, different types of license, pays a fee that works, you know, that ends up in the coffers of the state archives to support their programs.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Senator Kukesh?
I wonder if you could tell us what your, right now it says the cost of materials and supplies needed to provide the records. Is there a third category there that you need to add to that? I guess to clarify, you're coming here saying that actual costs do not work for you. So tell me what works.
Through the chair, Senator Kukesh. Now, I'm saying that if we waive the fee for being able to bill back for extensive research, I mean, we're talking beyond 5 hours in a month's time, that extensive research, if you take that away, then we need to come up with the money in some other way to be able to operate our programs. But, you know, that's the part that I see. It opens the door to, in my opinion, and we've had experience with it in the state in the last couple of years, to frivolous lawsuits that somebody can flood and basically shut down certain departments within the state by having so many requests for records, and that's with a fee. So if we take that fee away, I just see that it opens the door for even more of those kind of lawsuits or requests in the future.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for your knowledgeable testimony and taking the time to be here today. I think, as with all bills, sometimes as we get testimony, then it certainly causes committee members to struggle, and it's difficult that you know, to just go ahead and pass things through. So I think I just want to say thank you for being here and sharing a light of, and maybe allowing us to look at things that we wouldn't have probably thought of. So, and I know I appreciate all you do with the archives. It's a wonderful program. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I don't see anybody else. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. And are there comments and questions at this time? I would give you an opportunity. I'd like to go ahead and hold this bill and see if we can get the sponsor of the bill to maybe meet with some of maybe Rachel Petro and Mr. Cook, and maybe if we can get all that done, we could hear it again on Thursday. Senator.
I really don't think we need to do that personally. I think that I'm satisfied with the bill. I like the idea of the costs that are in there now. It just doesn't make any sense for me to hold it, but if you want to do it, you're the chairman, you can do that.
Okay, so there is an objection. Is there any other comments?
Well, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Meyer.
I think it's, I agree with Senator Cookish. This is one of these things that you can polish the apple forever trying to find the perfect solution. I think that Senator Ellis has done a good job here of certainly meeting my needs and my constituents' needs, because they would like to have all of this free, and since it is public information, they feel like it should be free. But on the other hand, it does cost the state, and so we do need to charge some. And I think Senator Ellis has found the right solution here. But you are the chairman, and if you would like, you know, to spend more time on looking at some of these other areas, certainly that's your prerogative.
And I believe every reasonable chairman can change your mind, so I'm going to go ahead and so what is the will on this bill? Okay, do I hear a motion to move Senate Bill 249 from committee with individual recommendations? Senator Meyer.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that we move Senate Bill 249 with the individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note from.
Do I hear any objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 249 moves out of State Affairs to Judiciary. We are adjourned. You get